What is going on? How the hell is everybody today? Good. Welcome to the Q-Man podcast, whatever this shit is called. I don't really know what my podcast is called. People are like, what is it called? The QTR podcast? Is it Quote the Raven? How do you want me to refer to you? I'm like, I don't know. You know, I just started recording it in 2018 and figured that the details would kind of just fall into place as time progressed. And if it gets to the point where it needs to be relevant, what it's called, then I guess we'll solidify some kind of name. But for now, nobody really cares. And so, so we're not going to worry about it. There's much bigger pressing issues at hand right now that we're going to talk about today, not the least of which is the extraordinarily precarious path that I believe global markets and the global economy are both on. And I swear I'm not saying that to be a fearmonger or to be a permabear or to be a misguided, person living in his own echo chamber, although Andy Schechtman is going to, he lives right in the echo chamber with me, except he has far more of a clue than I do, so I'm more inclined to listen to him than I am to listen to myself. This podcast, first and foremost, brought to you by my patrons, people that sign up and donate a monthly recurring sum to help support the podcast. That link's in the podcast description. And my longtime sponsors, my friends over at JM Bullion, the only place I buy my gold and silver bullion. I love JM Bullion. They've been in business for nearly a decade now. They've done over $7 billion in sales. And QTR podcast listeners have their own rep there, which means if you don't want to fumble through dealing with the website or online ordering, or you don't want to call a number where you have to go through a menu, just do this. Email Laura, L-A-U-R-A, at jmbullion.com. Tell her you're a QTR podcast listener, and whatever you need help with, she will be sure to help you out. As long as it relates to gold and silver bullion, she can't, she doesn't provide therapy services, so keep it to business, all right, fools? But anyways, I love JM Bullion. They turn my orders around quickly. They ship discreetly. And longtime supporters of this podcast, so very, very happy to shout them out. Please, if you have gold and bullion needs, shoot on over to JM Bullion. Those links are in my podcast description. This podcast also brought to you by my friend George Gammon over at Rebel Capitalist Pro, one of my absolute favorite services. George Gammon helps you figure out how to preserve your wealth in a world of out-of-control central banks where between inflation and taxation, your wealth is just fucking disappearing through, like, some type of evil fucking mathematical osmosis. I don't even know what you call it. Either way, it sucks, and George Gammon's Rebel Capitalist Pro is great because his team of experts, including Lynn Alden, Chris McIntosh, Brent Johnson, you get access to all of their premium services. They're much smarter than I am. They bring much more to the table. Although I have some very smart guests, I will say that. My guests, they make up for what I lack in overall macroeconomic intelligence. But Rebel Capitalist Pro is well worth it. He's got two great YouTube channels, George Gammon and Rebel Capitalist. Both of them are free, so if you want to check out his content ahead of time, you can just go over to YouTube, watch George Gammon. For his Rebel Capitalist Pro members, they get live question and answer sessions with George and his experts in addition to getting their premium research. They've got great user forums over there where they're batting around a ton of different ideas. So if you're a macro investor, you're looking for ideas, you can go and follow their model portfolios, all the special situations, and anything going on in the world, they're talking about it over there. So I love reading those forums, and I love George Gammon, but only as a friend. That link is in my podcast description. Tell George you want to try it out. Tell him the Q-Man sent you, and that he would that he said he'd hook you up, see if he gives you a discount or something. I'll talk to him about that shit. This podcast finally brought to you by my only Bitcoin sponsor, my kind friends over at Swan. Swan is a super simple Bitcoin app that helps you stack your Bitcoin on a recurring basis so you can set it and forget it like the Showtime rotisserie grill, like the Ronco Showtime rotisserie grill. See, I fucked that up on the last two podcasts today. Used to turn the extra afterburners on my brain power to get that analogy right. And I love Swan. They make it easy to buy Bitcoin. A lot of my friends, Larry Lepard, Lynn Alden, are involved with Swan. I've vetted them about as much as you can vet a sponsor related to Bitcoin. You know, there's risks inherent in Bitcoin. As I always say, I own some Bitcoin. I try to own anything without anything with a finite supply, given the precarious times we're heading into. But the Swan app is wonderful because you can set it to save automatically and close it and forget about it. And, you know, you come back a couple weeks later and you've got some Bitcoin stacked up. It's easy to use. Swan is now giving you no fees on your first $10,000 that you stack, which is great. So everywhere else, if you're looking to buy Bitcoin for the first time, they're going to charge you a fee. Swan is waiving fees for the first $10,000. And if you use my link, which is in my podcast description, automatically $10 in free Bitcoin when you sign up. So I don't know how the hell you say no to that. You'd have to be an idiot. Somebody said Matt Taibbi interviewed me last week, and somebody wrote in the comments of his interview. It's over on Racket News if you want to read it. But if you're a regular listener, you know, probably nothing that you haven't heard. Somebody wrote, I don't like that he calls himself an idiot, and then said, by the way, like, he's completely wrong on inflation or something. And I was like, look, you know, I have to be able to call myself an idiot if you're saying I'm getting it wrong. What kind of a critic says that you're getting things wrong but won't allow you to bestow the idiot label onto yourself? Folks, you can't have your fucking cake and eat it too, okay? I'm either an idiot or I'm getting things right. Either way, it's a win-win, because if I'm actually an idiot, my proclamations have been correct, which makes me prophetic and a genius. And if I'm getting things right, well, then we know the idiot label. It's just for laughs, folks. Speaking of which, good time for my disclaimer. I am not a investment advisor. I don't hold any licenses, any registrations. None of this is a solicitation to buy or sell any securities. I generally get things wrong all the time. I exist on the fringe. Please do not listen to or act on anything that I say in this podcast. Make your own decisions. Use your own brain. Wish in one hand and shit in the other and see which one fills up first. All right? Merry Christmas. Let's bring on Andy Shechtman. My man, Andy Shechtman of Miles Franklin Precious Metals and general internet fame. Andy is doing the tour, the likes of which I've never seen. If I didn't know any better, I would say that you just hit me up to come on the podcast for some exposure. You know, but I know, Mr. Shechtman, that our relationship runs deeper than that, my friend. Although, and I also enjoy the tour that you've been doing because I listen to everything that you do. Kitco, fucking all these other podcasts you've been doing. And I know you're a recurring guest, man, but I love having you back. I'm happy to have you here, man. How you doing?
Chris, I appreciate that, brother. I truly do. And, you know, there are very few people that I enjoy reading. Let's start there. You know, I mean, I used to really love to read Richard Russell. Reading seems to be something that people don't do anymore. You're one of the best writers I've ever come across. And I like the way that you are very conversational in your writing and makes me laugh, makes me think, makes me reflect. But you've also been right. And much of the things that you say, you've either been right or I know in my heart you will be right. Thing is that, you know, logic and outcome sometimes are a little bit disconnected, at least in terms of time frame. So it's an honor to be here, and yeah, exposure is really not something I need, but affiliation in the respect of being on a show with someone who I respect so tremendously, well, that's something I'm definitely into, and it's an honor to be here. I appreciate you having me back, brother.
Dude, compliment accepted. You know what? Usually I'd say, you know, I would be modest. Compliment accepted. End of story. That's all I'm going to say. Listen, I try to surround myself with smart people and people that think outside the box. You could turn the TV off and not read Twitter and not, you know, follow the financial world, and you're still going to get the mainstream narrative one way or the other. It comes out in conversation when you're out. It comes out in, you know, the Fed's press releases. It comes out, you know, we're just surrounded by it. And so I think that kind of being in an echo chamber and talking to people that are like-minded in how we think, it's not necessarily a bad thing. I think that you can do that and kind of bring things to an even balance where I've said many times, hey, there's been spots where I'm bullish on the markets. And just like there's going to be spots where I'm going to be bearish on gold. You know, when everybody's talking about gold miners and gold and we're at $4,000 an ounce and all these geopolitical conflicts have calmed down and we're, it looks as though we're going to hit a period of, you know, lower volatility and the currency shit has resolved itself. You know, I have nothing holding me back from saying, you know, I'd be a seller here or I would take some off here. It's just that hasn't happened. And I still think we're very, very early. So here's the first question I want to ask you. I had three experts. I wrote about this past week. I had three experts, Jack Baroogin, Harris Kupperman, and Peter Schiff, three people that I love talking to. All say 5% is the magic breaking point for the 10-year. And so the first question I want to ask, and the one that I'm wondering about myself the most, is this bond market going to kick the Treasury in the balls at some point and say enough is enough with the spending? Do you think the bond market's going to take charge here at some point?
It has to. I mean, absolutely it has to. And when you realize that it's not just the fact that we're adding $1 trillion in debt every 100 days, 100 plus billion in interest payments, roughly over the same amount of time, it's not even the insane fiscal policy of the U.S. government or the brain dead monetary policy of the Fed. All of that stuff certainly is, you know, that's I think what you're hedging at, but I think it's a lot deeper than that too. I think that we have proven to the rest of the world, largely through weaponizing of the dollar, that if you don't align ideologically with us, well, that's even a bigger problem. So, yeah, when you look at what gold has done over the past 25 years, it's outpaced the bond market, but it doesn't have the counterparty risk. And I think that's really the big problem here. It's counterparty risk on top of brain dead monetary policy and as irresponsible a fiscal policy as you could ever imagine. So, yes, I do think it is. And I don't know if 5% is the line in the sand. I mean, it just seems as though, according to Jim Willey, we can hand money to Ireland and the Caymans and the United Kingdom under the table to continue to, continue the facade, if you will, as to who would be stupid enough to buy any treasuries of maturity, any U.S. Bonds of length of maturity, 10-year or greater. Who in the right mind would do that? But I think it's a much bigger thing holistically that, yeah, we're a broken, insolvent country that is addicted to spending and is pissing a large portion of the world off that used to, you know, be the massive accumulators of our debt that I think are really not so keen on doing that anymore.
Yeah, it's that simple, right? And if you're running, look, from a fiscal policy standpoint, I know what the answer is, right? We have to stop spending. We have to cut spending somewhere. To start, we have to telegraph that that's what we're going to do before we even do it. And we're not doing that. Not only has our spending accelerated, and I mean, it really seems like we're just trying to YOLO the Treasury. I mean, $100 billion last weekend in foreign aid. Like, we cannot afford that right now. And I'm not being, you know, Mr. fucking Tea Party conservative here. Our fiscal situation is out of control. And the fact that we are not even sending a signal to the market that we're considering cutting. Of course we can't, right? Because it's an election year. The ultimate comeuppance would be something blowing up here before the election. But so I know what the answer is from a fiscal policy standpoint. If you are the Fed chair, Andy, what do you do? Because PCE came in hot, right? All the inflation readings last week came in hot. So there's no room to ease. Say the bond market doesn't take away the keys, or maybe it does. What do you do if you're heading up the Fed right now? What's your plan? Do you take the depression from leaving rates here?
I mean, he said he was a fan of Paul Volcker. He's no Paul Volcker who raised interest rates to, you know, 18.75%. I think they'll just try to keep it range bound. to not allow it to go too high, if you will, at least at their hands, to really disrupt the banking sector, to really disrupt the stock market, to create, you know, a big correction in the market, as you say, leading up to the election. And look, I think by cutting, we've lost all credibility at that point, complete and total credibility. And I don't think there is any way that they can lower rates. I really don't think that there is. And I think there's nothing but inflation and higher rates ahead of us. But if I had to guess, it will be range bound, you know, just like there was no inflation and then it was transitory and then it was structural, then it was gone, then it was back. It'll be the same thing here. Well, the economy is a little bit hotter than it was supposed to be. And also it's going to be higher for longer. And, you know, but we're thinking of lowering and maybe we'll do 2 rate cuts by the end of the year. Okay, maybe one. Well, maybe we're not going to do it. They're not going to do shit. And I don't think they really can do much of anything. You know, they can't really raise rates because we have to sell $14 trillion in bonds this year to retiring the maturing debt, to retire the maturing debt and also pay the current bills. And a lot of this debt's going to cost far more than the debt it's replacing, which could lead to even more printing to cover that cost. So you can't really raise rates. And well, if you lower the rates, you've just signaled to the rest of the world that you will never get your financial house in order. So I don't know, what do you do? He's got a very unenviable position, that is for sure. But you can expect a lot more jawboning and a lot less in terms of actual action, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, for sure. And it's not just raising that they can't do. They can't leave them where they are. So another bank went under last week, Republic Bank here, based here in Philadelphia. And this is going to start to accelerate now. We have redlined delinquencies. I saw today small business delinquencies are at their highest level in recent memories, and it's insane. I think it was small business mortgage delinquencies have hit like 40% or something like that. I read this morning, just an astonishing number. So not only can we not hike, I mean, we can if we have a death wish, but we can't leave rates where they are. So in a situation where you're saying they can't cut because the inflation, that's throwing a 55-gallon drum of gasoline onto the inflation pilot light if we do that, what do we do? What does the Fed do with rates at 5% when things start breaking and failing even more and it becomes larger than it is now and semi-systemic? What do they do?
Well, but see, Chris, this is what I've been talking about for the last year and a half, that I think that this is all intended. And maybe, you know, maybe I'm stupid for even saying these things publicly, but when you look at the things that we are doing to incentivize this, it starts to become, well, geez, could it be? I mean, I don't know if you're familiar with the Clower-Piven theory. If you're not, you should research it. It'll blow your mind. And of course, you know, when you realize that Cloward and Piven were professors who went to school at or taught at Columbia, just so happens that Jared Bernstein, the current financial or head of economic development in the United States government, well, he went there. So did Obama. So did Madeleine Albright and Bill Barr and the current chief of staff, Bilkin, and Eric Holder, and all these people went there, understood very well what the Clower-Piven theory is. You should check it out. But when you take a look at weaponizing of the dollar, when you take a look at sanctioning countries like China, where if they, you know, Janet just threatened them the other day, you and I were talking about that by text a few days ago, if you give any money to the Russian war machine, well, we'll sanction your companies, your banks, and Beijing itself. Well, we can give $200 billion to the Ukraine, but they can't. So we go around the world weaponizing the dollar, appearing to be wholly hypocritical. Our financial house is a complete and total disgrace. When you add in all of the unfunded liabilities, it's closer to $200 trillion than it is $34 trillion. We're broke, we're insolvent, we're hypocritical. We've signed an executive order to go green. We've incentivized all these countries to join the BRICS, to find a rallying cry. And then look at what we've done to the inside of the country. I mean, open borders, lawlessness, questions on the elections, questions on the judicial system, wokeness, all of this shit that makes everyone say, what's happened to the country I grew up in? And you ask yourself, is this too stupid to be stupid? What does the Fed do? The Fed really can't do much. And I'll tell you something. My mentor, Chris, was a guy named Richard Russell. God rest his soul. Almost 20 years ago, the dude said the Fed has already crossed the Rubicon. They have two choices, inflate or die. What about finding a villain, number three? And those sons of bitches, Xi Jinping and Putin and OPEC, how could they do it to us? How could they dump dollars to the degree that they have? How else do you explain the brain dead policies, fiscal in particular, of a broken and solvent government that thinks it's okay to continue to borrow money to hand out to the rest of the world, leaving our country and the infrastructure and everything that this country once stood for in shambles? And how is it that when the dollar, the linchpin of the hegemony, is our relationship with OPEC and Saudi Arabia, that we sign an executive order to go green and make that front and center policy? Everything that we are doing as a broken, insolvent country, both inside and outside, make me wonder, is this too stupid to be stupid? Could this be option three, that we've reached the end of the road? So what is the Fed going to do? Maybe they're doing what they want to do, and that is to incentivize a reset, and not at the hands of Powell or not at the hands of Janet Yellen, even though it really is, but a villain to blame it on. And you, I mean, I don't know how else you can explain the stupidity. I mean, you would be a far better president and a far better, you know, head of the Federal Reserve or Treasury Secretary. And I mean that sincerely. I think anyone who listens to this would agree. Just because you ooze common sense. Where is the common sense in any of the policy decisions of this government and of this Federal Reserve? Or is it too stupid to be stupid? And I'll leave that up to you. I don't know what the hell the Fed does.
It's right on the line, man, because, you know, I wouldn't underestimate the power of arrogance and hubris and generally, you know, all of these overreach of government type people that think that they know what's best for everybody else. That's a very powerful personality trait, if you want to call it that, personality defect. But that's a very powerful, you know, arrogance is extremely powerful. And so if, you know, one common thing I've seen across these Western democracies with these, you know, formerly liberal, they call themselves liberal, but, you know, formerly actual liberal leaders, is that they do think they know what the objective truth is to everything. And they do know what's best for everybody and what's best for the world as a whole. And that's how they govern. They, you know, they would, the party that used to be traditionally about preserving liberty and freedom has now become, you're going to do what we say. And that is first off, it's a fucking dumb idea, right? when you mix that with general arrogance and hubris, it is possible to just govern very close to the worst possible way. And I'm not being hyperbolic. I've said a million times on my blog and on the podcast, the government has to make the worst decisions before it arrives at any type of common sense solution. It's almost like it's written in the stars, and it's from every problem ranging from the collapse of the global economy all the way down to, you know, what Joe Biden is going to have for breakfast this morning. They have to. It's destiny that the government makes the worst decisions, and it is only when they have run out of them that they reluctantly start to peer over at the one common sense solution that, you know, are you smarter than a fifth grader would have arrived at immediately. And so I do think they're right on the line. I had this moment last week where I was watching a lot of the footage of these Palestinian protests. And I just, you know, I had a couple moments. The first was I was walking down JFK Boulevard and I see this guy who looks like the comic book man from The Simpsons. and he's walking down JFK. Okay, he's obviously not taking care of himself. He's out of shape. He's a slob. And I know everybody's doing their best. I know, right? But he's obviously not concerned with taking care of himself too much. And he's walking down fucking JFK Boulevard with a fucking Red Bull in one hand and a newspaper that says The Daily Communist, or whatever the hell it's called, in the other hand. And he's on his way to or fro one of these protests that's happening in Center City, Philadelphia. And he's walking around with a newspaper. It's called, like, The Communist. You know, it's got the hammer and sickle on the front of it. And, you know, I don't know where he was off to or where he was coming from, but that guy thinks he's right. And that's disturbing. And so when I got back to the house that day or the next day, I saw somebody had posted on Twitter two things. One is a photograph of that newspaper, because apparently it's being handed out at all of these Palestinian rallies. And the second thing is that the tents being used across the country to protest are all the same types of tents. Everybody's got the same brand and the same color, which begets this question. Who is funding, okay, not just funding the protests, but in essence, they're funding civil disobedience and they're funding volatility within the country. And they obviously, you know, I know people say Soros, okay? So it's Soros, and he's, I guess what, giving money to NGOs, and the NGOs are funding all this shit. And it just makes you think, like, the borderline between I've got a good cause and I'm gonna implement it through peaceful protesting and, you know, I'm gonna fund this, versus the idea of why would that old fuck be empowering people across the country to be handing out communist newspapers and disrupting college campuses and disrupting the inner cities. And I have to tell you, man, it does walk that line between good intentions and just thinking you're right. And I got to tell you, if it's anything other than arrogance and thinking you're doing what's best for the world, if it's anything else, it's just somebody trying to start shit. It's just evil. It's the good versus evil, and this is somebody with nefarious intentions. So I haven't thought about it in the way you just said more than I did last week.
Well, let me answer it two different ways. Let me just touch on, I'll take the devil's advocate side first, to your point, and then I'll answer something else. But okay, if we take it, it's that line of hubris and you know, okay, it's just, they're just, this is who they are. Fine. What are they going to do? The Treasury just announced that they are going to launch in the next several days a regular operation of Treasury buybacks, right? And the goal to support the liquidity of the bond market. And, you know, when you realize that the debt that we have is starting to make much of the world look at things cross-eyed, this is something that they say they need to do in order to make the Treasury market more liquid and resilient, they say. And this is going to happen in the next few days, but who will be the entity that will do the buying? Because the Treasury's broke. It ain't going to be the Treasury. So who is it? It's the New York Fed. And they're going to have to conjure up cash to buy those bonds. And while a good portion of the world is shunning our bonds, and for good reason, keeping in mind that we do need to sell almost $14 trillion this year to retire $9 trillion in maturing at higher rates, plus the current bills, you know, who's going to do it? And this is debt monetization. This is the beginning to Weimar Republic. The Treasury says they're going to do it, but they're broke. So it'll be the Fed that will come up with the cash to do it. So that's, you know, maybe what their plan is. But going back to what you were just saying, you know, again, going back to the Cloward-Piven theory, the whole idea of it is to purposely overwhelm the U.S. economy to create a systemic failure, destroying capitalism from within. I'm going to read you just a couple pieces of it. Please, the primary objective of the strategy is to create chaos with the hopes of destroying America's capitalist economy and replacing it with a socialist system that includes guaranteed incomes. The massive drive to recruit the poor onto the welfare rolls. The point of surging welfare claims is to enroll as many individuals as it takes to send the United States into economic crisis. Now think of the 12 million people here illegally. Current estimates suggest that 63% of non-citizens are actively accessing one or more forms of taxpayer-funded welfare, compared to just 35% of U.S. households. It goes on to say Cloward and Piven specifically mentioned targeting America's large cities for their colossal welfare push. A series of welfare drives in large cities would, we believe, impel action on a new federal program to redistribute income. Cloward and Piven revealed that the best way to achieve their goals is to create a new loyal voting bloc out of the rapidly increasing number of welfare recipients. You think any of these 12 million are going to vote for Trump when he wants to send them back?
When was this written?
They were professors at Columbia in the late 60s, and they taught this. And so two more pieces that I think are worthy of noting. The Cloward and Piven insist that the intentional destruction of America's major systems will compel the federal government to develop a communist, isn't that funny that you just said that? Universal basic income program. If this strategy were implemented, a political crisis would result that could lead to legislation for a guaranteed annual income. The two reiterated this when declaring the ultimate aim of this strategy is a new program for direct income distribution. Here's the crazy one, the last piece. And if you think about it, you're like, holy shit, they're doing this. Both Cloward and Piven agreed that the mainstream media would play a critical role in their organized attack against America. To quote Cloward and Piven, as the crisis develops, it will be important to use the mass media to inform the broader liberal community about the inefficiencies and injustices of welfare. Now, if you Google universal basic income, you'll find 5 million articles that are all recently written. And if you look at who went to school under Cloward and Piven, you got Obama and Jared Bernstein and the rest of these U.S. idiots that are all part of this bigger deal. And is there a fine line between conspiracy and reality? Sure there is. So either the Fed will conjure up money to buy all the debt that no one else in the world wants because we've pissed in the punch bowl and we've become a broke, insolvent bully, or this is being done intentionally to find a villain to reset the system. And, you know, think about it, Chris, who owns all the bonds? Who's been buying all the bonds? It'll be the money markets, the mutual funds, the public chasing yield, as Japan, China, Saudi, Russia, they all have been shedding bonds. And we're supposed to believe that the Cayman Islands and the UK and Ireland are filling the void. Maybe they are, or as Jim Willie says, maybe they're being funded under the table to keep this facade going. I don't know, brother, but all I can tell you is this, that it doesn't take much in the way of logic to understand that what is happening in this country is almost maybe worse than anything that we've done outside the country and the mismanagement of the world reserve currency. So I would suggest everyone read the Cloward Piven theory, understand Obama went there and is a student of it, and then Google Cloward Piven theory / Jared Bernstein, the lead economic advisor, and you'll see how he feels about it. And you start to wonder, shit, man, are they really trying to do this so that they can reset the system? And because all of the debt, Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, government military pensions, that's all owed to us, not the rest of the world, to us, on top of the $34 trillion debt, mostly owed to us. So it's a whole hell of a lot easier to reset the system. And who's the number two in charge at the White House in terms of economic policy? Well, that's Lael Brainard. She was at the Treasury. And if God forbid, Biden administration wins again, God forbid, she will be the head of the Federal Reserve. She is a modern monetary theorist. She was number two under Powell before she went to the advisory role under Biden, the White House. She ran the point for FedNow, which is like Venmo on crack, issued by the Fed. And she ran point for, worked directly with MIT in development of the new CBDC that Biden fast-tracked. So my point with all of this is, you know, the people who listen to you are very logical because you're incredibly logical. You're funny, but logical, and witty, but logical. And the people that follow you obviously understand your logic. And I would simply say to you this, that none of those people want to take the CBDC. You know, if you want to go to a dispensary and buy a joint and a pack of cigarettes and a fifth of whiskey You don't want that on the ledger. If you lose money at the casino, you don't want that on the ledger. You don't, and no one does. You don't want to be told what you can and cannot buy. You don't want to be to have no privacy. No one does who would listen to your logic. But what happens if the whole world, like I've talked about with you many times, automatically has an incentive to shun the dollar? Because we are going green, because we have weaponized the dollar, and because we have let this country fall apart, and the rest of the world says, fuck it, we're not taking dollars for oil anymore or any commodities, we're out. We're not buying your treasuries, we're out. And the whole system resets on us. We own the majority of the debt. And we are stupid enough to take a vaccine with no research, most of us did, half, way more than what 80% of the country did. They'll be just as stupid to believe that the rest of the world did this to us. And the rallying cry is have no fear. Lael Brainard is here. Here's your new CBDC. After all, we are modern monetary theorists. Just sign on the dotted line, Chris, and we'll make you whole. Because when this all blows up, the banks, the insurance companies, stocks, bonds, real estate, it's all inversely correlated to a spike in interest rates. Not that Powell has the balls to become Paul Volcker, but that the market does automatically in response to a dollar that is hyperinflating. So could it be too stupid? I don't know. But when you read the Clower-Piven theory and understand that Obama went there, and if you ask most people, do you think it's Obama pulling the strings? Or do you think this dude who can't even put six words together is pulling the strings? Don't answer. You know, I don't care. Think about it, all you people out there. Think about it. Who's pulling the strings? And ask yourself, could this be the case? I don't know, but I don't know how else you ever pay off $200 trillion in debt, especially as rates are going higher. So you might as well find a villain to fall on the sword for.
And it's not even like we're running the Keynesian book and like things are manageable, right? Because maybe in the 80s and the 90s and with QE1, you know, people would say, hey, it's okay to run, you know, we'll make it up in production, right? We'll make it up in GDP. I saw a great chart today that Zero Hedge posted, which was the rise in GDP versus the rise in the deficit. I think it was year over year. So it's not even close. So, like, even for the bullshit buy now, pay later system that we're on, the delta is widening in terms of how it's slipping out of our hands and we're losing control of it. And to your point, it does feel, when you look at it logically, that, and I look, I don't want to be sensationalist, but I think if Biden wins this next election, I think there's going to be enormous problems. I think, you know, hand to God, I'm trying to think about it from my 20-year-old self that was like, that would listen to me now and would say, that guy's an idiot, he's a conspiracy theorist, he's fucking this. Hey, man, we're doing the right thing. We're fighting climate change. Like, we're fighting for the cause. Whatever. We're going to be fine. We've ran a debt for, you know, we've ran a deficit for years. With the national debt's, you know, normal. It's money that we owe to ourselves, all these things. But, like, I don't know if it's just the older I get or the more shit that I notice. But, you know, it's like this idea of privacy with the money that you're talking about. I'll give you an interesting analog. I live near Chinatown. And so I'm in Chinatown almost every day. I eat there. I go to a couple of like tea places to go get tea. There's super fresh like supermarket there that does like all vegetables and it's got great produce. So I go there for produce. I go get my sciatica worked on. There's like a pain away place where I can go get massaged. There's a couple of different like convenience stores. There's a haircut place that I go to once in a while. I'm in Chinatown a lot. And if I want to do two of those things in a day, so first off, the first thing is nobody in Chinatown wants to take credit cards. You know, they all want cash. In the city, that's generally the thing. Everybody wants cash. You know, my regular barber wants cash. A lot of the bars that I go to are still cash only. You know, so you got to have cash when you're in the city. But I'm just thinking, like, more than once, I've gone to go to an ATM to take out money, to go food shopping and then to go to dinner or something in Chinatown where I know it's going to be cash and cash. And the most they let you take out is $200 at some of these ATMs. And I just think to myself, like, that's not even enough money to get groceries and dinner. And, you know, if you want to combine any of those activities that I just talked about all in one day and you're paying cash, you got to, like, you have to make, like, preparations in advance. Never mind the fact if you want to go to Atlantic City and you want to take out a couple $1,000s ahead of a weekend. You know, like I would go to the bank on a Friday if I was going to go to Atlantic City for Friday, Saturday, Sunday, take out cash. Because otherwise, if you try to get it in the casino, they charge you a bunch of money for it. You go to a bank to go take out $3,000 and it's like the fucking Spanish Inquisition. I've never seen anything. They start asking questions. They want to know, you know, they need your driver's license. They always ask, what do you do for a living? They're like, I'm like, hey, we're talking about $3,000 here. You know what I mean? Which, by the way, today is nothing. Except we have these arcane AML rules that have been in place forever ago that don't get updated, you know, for inflation. And I'm sure the government likes it that way because then more people fall under the threshold of needing to collect their information every time they want to access their money. And some of the other examples that you gave, I forget what they were, but it just feels like between that, the mass immigration, all of those people are going to vote Democrat, the push for universal basic income, the loss of control with the Fed right now, the dollar's holding up for now, but we'll see what happens when the economy implodes. It just feels like everything is moving together to this state of uniformity, which is why that theory that you're talking about makes perfect sense. If that's really what's going on, they're nailing it. I don't know if it is. I hope to God that it isn't. But they're killing it because that is one step closer. And I swear I'm not trying to be sensationalist, but it's one step closer to all of us just being batteries like in the Matrix. You know, like if you can't take your own cash out and go to a fucking food truck and buy a, you know, shish kebab and not have any transactional record of that, if that some needs to be on a ledger somewhere, the country's lost. Like, and so the other thing I wanted to add is last week, now people are talking about Biden's new capital gains tax ideas, right? He wants to tax capital gains at 44%. And the, what I think is just a weapons grade, insane four alarm red flag is the idea of taxing unrealized gains, which is just, it's the idea of losing your money to the state, which we already do through taxation and inflation kind of by osmosis. It's that on crack. If you can tax people based on their unrealized gains, there's no rules. There's no rules. I mean, we might as well. I mean, you know what's going to happen, right? If that happens, everybody that's going to negatively affect is taking their wealth and they're moving out of the country immediately. And that's just going to cripple the economy. And maybe when the economy cripples, they shuffle in this new system where everybody's on the ledger and you can't take more than $200 out of an ATM. And they need to know what you're doing at all times. And I don't know, man. But there's definitely a case. Whatever the opposite of entropy is, there's a case for that. It feels like we're all moving towards this collective communist fucking, we just want everybody in the country to be equal. And when that happens, as you know, it's not we're all wealthy billionaires equal. It's everybody shoveling shit for a living equal. And here's your government-sponsored breakfast, lunch, and dinner. We know where you are at all times. Enjoy your 1 hour of free play that we give you every week. That's the hereinafter referred to as your liberty and your freedom, what remains of it, right? Or am I being insane?
No, man, I read your article, and in it you talk about how, you know, they're looking to raise $4.3 trillion over 10 years by imposing the unrealized gain tax. And I thought your comment was brilliant when you said we could save $1 trillion just by not sending $100 billion a year to other nations, for starters.
Right.
You know, we're so the way that we're spending money, if you spend $100 every second of every day, it would take you almost 2,000 years to equal the 6.2 trillion the US government has spent in just the last 12 months. And the point that you bring up about, you know, what would happen? Well, the first thing would happen is that everyone would sell, and they would sell before the thing got enacted, and it would cripple. Think what Nvidia and think of what Bitcoin, all of those unrealized gains. Think of
Right.
the collapsing. And then your point, which I didn't think about until I read your article, was spot on. These are the people who have enough money. Like I said, fuck it to Minnesota. And I left my corporate office there. I left all my friends there. I left, you know, half my family there. And I said, I'm out. When they lost their mind, when they defunded the police, led the nation's charge in defunding the police and let the third precinct, of which one of my best friends from childhood was the sergeant there, watched that third precinct burn down on TV. And then the governor had the audacity to raise income taxes to over 10% in Minnesota, for God's sakes, where you freeze your ass off. And, you know, I mean, the quality of living was always great, I thought. Little House on the Prairie and, you know, Mary Tyler Moore was safe and everything, but it ain't worth 10%. And then when they're telling you at 7 o'clock at night, you know, early on in 2020, don't leave your house, Antifa's coming out to the suburbs. I'm sleeping with an AR-15 on my nightstand. I'm thinking, screw it. I voted with my feet and I moved to Florida, which I used to get into fights with my wife. I mean, we're not leaving. We're never leaving. This is where my business is, my family, my roots. Well, I left. I got pissed off enough, I left, and so too will these people. The difference is they, to your point, will leave the country. And these are the people that create the jobs. You
Right.
know, I have my company did over 900 million in sales last year. I have 14 brokers and staff, and every one of them is benefiting from the company that I own. And and I'm just a small guy compared to some of these big players that will say, fuck it, and they will pull up tent and they will leave. And when you start to pull away the people that create the jobs that make the economy buzz, it's just, again, is it too stupid to be stupid or isn't it? I mean, it's just common sense. You don't have to be an economist to understand that a move like that has massively negative, you know, repercussions.
And
And
think about the risk reward too. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but
no, it's not
think
fine.
about what we're hoping to get versus what we're risking, right? We're hoping to get 4 trillion over 10 years, right? Okay, big fucking deal. 4 trillion over 10 years is nothing. It's
Right.
$400 billion a year, which is nothing. We spend that in fucking foreign aid and all kinds of other bullshit nonsense. We could save four. Listen, if me and you had 2 days with the budget, we could find $400 billion a year without an issue, and nobody would notice anything different when they got up in the morning and went about their day. I guarantee you. Okay, so you're talking about this excruciatingly small amount of cash that we're trying to find, and how are we going to do it? We're going to tax the people, like you said, who are the job creators. They're going to say, oh, it's only four people that are over $100 million. First off, that's how it starts. Okay. Then 100 million becomes 10 million. Then 10 million becomes a million. And then all of a sudden, it's everybody. It's number one. Number two, you're right. They're going to pull all their investments out of the market. Okay. And these are the people, these are the 1%. So, you know, they can move the market and have an impact on the economy, even though there may only be a handful of them, just as much as the entire rest of the 99% of the country. If they all decide to leave, that's a blow. If they all decide to sell at the same time, that's a blow. And these are the people with the means. You know what it is for somebody who's worth $500 million to pick their shit up and leave? You know what it's worth? If it's going to save them, and you know, if they're going to save $100 million a year in taxes, you know what it's gonna be for them? It's gonna be probably $1 million or $2 million in administrative one-time fees. They're gonna buy a passport in fucking wherever, you know, somewhere in the EU or somewhere that's, you know, got a better tax There's a million places. Mauritius, they're going to get a fucking passport by making a $200,000 investment in a location. They're going to buy themselves a mansion out on an island in the fucking Mediterranean, and they're out, and that's it. And they'll pay a guy $500,000 to get all the legal shit done. They're on the fucking yacht the next day, man. They're on the, they say the brokers sell the house, sell the shit, we're out of here. And so when I say these people have the means to leave, it's nothing for them. You know, if me and you, if me personally, if I wanted to move to the Mediterranean, it would be a process. You know, for these people, it's not. They got their own jet and everything. They could be there in 6 hours and they could have their fucking underlings do all the paperwork, you know? So all that
my
money.
My guess is they're already setting the table. They're already, you know, if they already haven't got that second place and that second passport, you can bet your ass that the wheels are in motion right now.
For what? For $4 trillion over 10 years. You know, you're just, it's beyond counterintuitive. It's the complete other end of the Laffer curve, right?
Yeah.
It's not like, oh, we've just kind of nudged ourselves past the apex here a little bit. We're in official fuck around and find out territory, you know. On the Laffer curve diagram.
100% the law of diminishing returns. We are at that point. Absolutely.
And, you know, it sends a message, too, to people that aren't worth $100 million. You know, why invest? Right? Even if you're worth nothing. Why would you, you know, why invest? What do you do? You sit around, wait to run up a high score in the stock market so they can come around and tax it before you fucking realize the gain? It's just such a toxic idea. And it's frightening.
Yeah, it is frightening. And this is why you've seen countries like China sell $23 billion of treasuries in February alone. And, you know, little by little, they continue to distance themselves from the system, slowly selling treasuries, slowly accumulating commodities, striking deals all around the world. You know, I focus a lot on precious metals. Obviously, the Chinese are the biggest buyers of it and producers of it. But it's not just precious metals. You know, with the Belt Road Initiative and the BRICS, they're making relationships with all of these countries for everything from rare earths to soft commodities like corn and wheat and soybeans. They're buying all of that, not from the U.S. and Australia anymore. In fact, they just canceled big contracts with them in favor of buying them from Brazil, paying for it in yuan, which is immediately convertible into gold on the Shanghai Gold Exchange. I don't know how many people know this, but the Chinese bought the LME, the London Metals Exchange, a few years ago. That's not the LBMA, where the precious metals are traded, but those are all the base metals that you would need to build an economy. And now they are warehousing these metals in China that are traded in London. See, they're setting the stage, and they are buying everything that you need to bust away from a country that's lost its bearings. And you're right, a country that, you know, incentivizes hard work and ingenuity and investment, now is penalizing it, has lost its way completely and totally. It's everything, it's completely counter to everything that capitalism in this country stands for. And to tax people before they realize a gain is ridiculous. So what happens if you're taxed on your unrealized gains and the next day the market collapses? So now what? Now you only get to carry forward $3,000 a year off a regular income, or indefinitely if you ever are so lucky to make a gain again. The whole thing is poorly thought out, and again, only puts a stain upon all of the wonderful things that this country stood for. And so this is why I think the way I do. I hate being a cynical, you know, as I am, Chris. My parents were hippies. I grew up at a time I respected and understood anything and everyone. I was good with no matter what you did or where you were from. I didn't care. Just don't impose it upon me. I was very tolerant, very open-minded. And I look at the world right now, and all I see in this country are things that upset me, especially when I look at through the eyes of my youngest child, who's still 16, and I wonder what kind of world she's growing up in. So when I talk to you, I do feel better because you're very sane in the way that you see things, but and maybe a little bit more balanced than I am. But I'll tell you, the more that I see what I see, the more idiocy that I see around me, the incompetence, I'm beginning to wonder again, could it really be that the people pulling the strings are have that much hubris, are that power hungry that they think they're really doing the right thing? Or is everything kind of, like all the tents are the same color, huh? Well, that's interesting. It's real interesting. And so I wonder, is this coordinated? Not sure, brother. I don't know, but God bless people like you, man. And I mean that sincerely because, there are a lot of people out there that are very well read. They're just reading the wrong shit. And that's for damn sure. And, I just, it's an honor to be here and to siphon a little bit of your wisdom and makes me feel better to know that there are a few people out there that see the world, at least understand the way I'm looking at it. And I'll caveat this to everyone out there. I hope I'm wrong, but everything I see every day makes me feel like I'm not. And it's funny, one last thing, when I sent you that text the other day, can you believe this shit that he's trying to do this? Have you seen this? And you immediately text me back. You'd already written an article on it. So I know you're watching the same things that
That's
I am.
exactly
And
what happened.
so anyways, man, I don't know. I guess only time will tell, but I do know this. The Chinese have a curse that says, may you live in interesting times. And between the very big BRICS meeting in October and the roughly over 120 more meetings that lead up to it in Russia and the election in November, I don't have any hope at all that this is not going to be anything other than interesting as hell, that's
Oh,
for
it's
sure.
going to be wild. There's going to be no shortage of things to pay attention to over the land. I mean, that's a good point. It's definitely going to be interesting. What do you make of, I mean, I just can't, I can, my brain can't even process the election and what that's going to be like. And we could talk about that for hours and all the different things that go with it. But let me ask you about the yen first. What do you make of what's going on in Japan with the yen?
Well, I think that it is one of these deals where it's very similar, I guess you could say, to what's happening here. I mean, they're really, for the most part, they're trapped as far as I'm concerned. And I mean, they're in big trouble, right? At 156 or 7 or 8, whatever it is, to the dollar, as the yields have been climbing due to shockingly the re-accelerating inflation that was under control. And if this were a normal world, the Bank of Japan would just raise rates to protect the collapsing yen. But at a debt to GDP ratio of 263%, mind you, I don't think anyone's ever come back when they've crossed 230, ever, ever in history. And they're not going to be able to service that debt, so it ends up in a default. And of course, they could sell US treasuries to prop up the yen. People are definitely going to buy those high yielding treasuries, which then props up the dollar and you're back to square one again. So I don't know. What do you do? I think that, maintaining those low rates, you have this massive carry trade, which, puts the dollar up and pushes the yen down. And the longer the Fed keeps the rates high, the worse this thing blows out. So I don't know what the hell they do. I think they are trapped, much like the US is trapped. They're all trapped because when you fuck with Mother Nature and you suppress interest rates, which creates misallocations in resources and capital, it creates massive distortions in asset prices, there is always a bar tab to be paid.
Always.
And I don't know how or when it happens, but yeah, you could say they're similar to us in that they're cornered. But if I had to guess, if I had to guess, at some point, I think that it wouldn't surprise me if they tried to break away from purchasing oil in US dollars. And that's kind of the problem. You have to break sides, you got to break ranks, and you got to choose the other side. And if they could buy their oil in yen or in gold, maybe they would do it. Maybe they would switch sides, which is only going to make things much worse. They've been supporting the strength of the dollar through their yen carry trade, for a very long time. Maybe those days are coming to an end, but I don't think there's much they can do. What do you think?
Yeah, I don't think there's much they can do either. And I really don't know. You know, again, this is another one of those things where we're going to be living in interesting times. Things are starting to break, man. You know, it's not just Japan. I mean, look at gold over the last 6 months. You can make an argument that gold's move over the last 6 months is the beginning. I mean, if you're a technical analysis person, this move over the last 6 months, this is about as Katie barred the door bullish of a move as you can possibly, because no matter how you slice it with gold, whether you're looking at it on a log scale or you're looking at an inflation adjusted chart, or, you know, we've been range bound for so long, and then we just take this 2000 out, and then all of a sudden and rates, you know, gold has decoupled from real rates. And so it's not like gold is making this crazy move as the Fed is cutting. Gold's saying we're doing something different now. That's basically what the price of gold. If you look at gold versus real rates, about 2 years ago, gold just said, we're not following this trend any longer. Something different is happening. And so you have all these things going on behind the scene. You have our fever pitch of spending. You have the yen collapsing in Japan. And it really feels like you have this balance of power kind of shifting globally. And so at the same time, you have all these geopolitical conflicts going on. You have Israel and Iran. You have Gaza. You have Taiwan and China. And I really don't know, man. I'm encouraged by the fact that Trump is leading in the polls now in a lot of these swing states, because it says to me that people have had enough. And at the end of the day, you know, the people have the power. One way or the other, at the end of the day, you know, it's like what happened in China when Shanghai tried to do a COVID lockdown one more time at the end of, I don't know, 2022. And the people started protesting, which never happens in China. And the government just quietly said, okay, we're not going to do this. Just a subtle reminder that there's 6 billion people on Earth, you know, and maybe collectively only 500,000 people in their respective bureaucracies that are supposedly, you know, the powers that be, counting all of the unelected globalist organizations as well. So I'm encouraged by that. I'm just, you know, it's really worrisome. I get that people don't like Trump. I really do. You know, I get that he stiffed his vendors. I get that he's a fucking chauvinist. I get that he cheats on his wife. I get all that stuff, right? So I'm not here to make a moral case for the guy. But when you look, you know, that has nothing to do with the fact that a judge just went on record and basically told the world that he thinks this property in Florida that this guy owns is worth $18 million. It doesn't, you know, when it, obviously it's worth at least $200 or $300 million. It doesn't change the fact that, you know, they're going after him for this hush money payment, which, okay, is $130,000, where the lady signs a fucking NDA with him. Two private parties working out a contract, bing, bang, boom, it's done. And all of a sudden, you know, you got a DA here that's pulling down all of these esoteric laws, trying to turn this into some federal felony. I mean, that's disturbing any way you look at it. And so that kind of stuff is like, it's, you know, I'm not going to defend him morally, you know, I won't. But in terms of policy and what's best for the country, I think he's obviously, and just general sentience and being lucid, I think he's obviously the better of the two. Fucking dude makes me laugh. I mean, I hate to admit it, but he's just fucking funny. Like, he just says whatever he wants, good or bad, but he makes me laugh. And what they're doing to him right now, it just makes me wonder what else could they do?
There's, you know, more coming, brother. There's more coming. And I live not
and he's
too
winning.
Far from here.
He's winning. Yeah. Right, well, now, I think he's got all 9 swing states right now.
God willing, that continues. And everything you said about him, I echo. And I live not too far from Mar-a-Lago. And, you know, there are houses in my golf community that I live in that are almost $18 million. And this, you know, his place is so outrageous, it's not even funny. It's worth easy $200 million. Sylvester Stallone just bought a house on Palm Beach for over $30 million. It's about one-fifth the size and nowhere near as beautiful. So all that stuff is, that's all true. And it's disgusting. And I think it's not lost on the rest of the world. The electoral, the Justice Department, the two things that make this country special, really on a deep level,
right.
Lady Liberty blindfolded, holding the scales of justice, bullshit, she's peaking. And when you talk about, the electoral process, the whole thing of being the beacon of liberty in this country, in the world, and fairness, and to wonder, is it fucked up? If he does lose, yeah, it will be a problem as far as I'm concerned. And as far as your comment on gold, yeah, I mean, if we believe the shit coming out of the Bureau of Labor Statistics that real rates are, or that the inflation is where it is at only 3%, well, we all know that's a lie. John Williams of Shadow Stats would tell us it's at 11% using the gauges that they used to use. But all right, let's play their game. In a world where you're witnessing a positive real return for the first time in almost two decades, and on short-term treasuries where you can get 5.5% for, 90 days or whatever, gold should be getting crushed. In a world where the dollar is at the top of its range, 107, 108, whatever, what that tells me is what I said earlier. The rest of the world does not care. Those that are buying, the big central banks, they don't give a shit about these relationships. They don't care about a strong dollar or positive real return. They understand that holding U.S. treasuries is a weapon of the U.S. government, that if you do not align with them, that weapon can be can be taken from you, can be sanctioned from you, not to mention the potential for default and inflation risk. None of these relationships, these correlations, matter anymore. I think gold is being remonetized around the world and looked at in a very different metric. And so to see gold moving up in the face of a strong dollar and positive real return is incredibly bullish. And what makes it even more bullish, you take a look at the ETF participation in the West, it's falling at a 45-degree
right,
angle.
Right.
Now, when I say that to my buddy Bill Holter, Bill says, yeah, a lot of that is the big money that is doing share redemption out of the ETFs and in a very private manner, draining the shelves instead of taking delivery on COMEX. Some
right.
of that is true, but I will tell you that it's also been, it's true that there's been a lot of people, for whatever reason, either because they have to or they're just tired of waiting, they've been selling into the rally. So you have American participation at record low levels in ETFs and in physical holdings. At the same time, you have positive real rates and a strong dollar, and gold keeps on going higher. That should be about as bullish of a backdrop as one could ever, ever assume or ask for. And I think it's worth noting that I don't think we've even begun to see what this will really do when the American public wakes up, which currently, from Joe and Jane Sixpack to the Harvard Endowment Fund, you take a total allocation in metals, Rick Rule will tell you it's 0.5%.
Right.
So make it 5%, it's a tenfold increase. That's rocket fuel. Yeah.
Yeah.
All your points are very well. And as far as Trump is concerned, look, he's not perfect, but I'll tell you what, the current administration is the worst thing that's ever happened to this country. And God help us if for some crazy reason they find a way to win again.
I just, I think if that allocation goes to 5%, it's rocket fuel, like you're saying, but I think the miners... I think, look, the GDX is at 34. I think there's a case for 150 easily. I think there's a case for 200 on the GDX. Because if you look at the miners and you look at their models, they're modeling for 2025, 2026 gold prices of like $1,700 and $1,800. And so... you take that and then you multiply it by the leverage that they get and multiply it by how historically undervalued they are compared to the price of gold and how gold is historically undervalued compared to the market. And it's just, it feels like miners could be a fucking slingshot higher when
100% they are.
But everybody's got to come to their senses, like you're talking about, the American public, and it's got to be more than a couple people buying gold bars at Costco. And so I don't even think the move has started yet.
No, I agree. I completely agree. If you took the market capitalization of Coca-Cola, it's probably more than every mining share on the planet. And you have amazing opportunity in mining shares. There's no question, no question about it, 100%. And I think people ought to look at them because they have been a very abused and underinvested sector. And you ask guys that have really made lots of money in investing, like Rick Rule, he'll tell you the biggest money he's ever made is in buying assets that were left for dead, that nobody wanted. And this is one of those things. You put it together with a massive rally in gold and the mining shares until just last week or so have pretty much not noticed it at all. I think you're spot on that. And I would say one thing in that I would not confuse physical holdings with mining shares, because although they are correlated together, the leverage you get with mining shares is extraordinary, but it does cut both ways. But I will tell you that if you added 10 to 15% allocation of your assets, your investable assets, into mining shares at these levels, if the public indeed does wake up, I think the upside potential is far greater than the 85% of the assets underneath it combined.
Yeah, I think you're right. Well, I'll remind everybody that this isn't financial advice, just how me and you personally feel. Listen, man, I want to thank you for taking an hour out of your evening for me.
You
I
got it,
genuinely
brother.
appreciate it. It's great to talk to you. If people
Yeah,
want to reach
man.
out to you, it's andy@milesfranklin.com, right?
Well, you did that to me last time too, and I'm good with it. Yes, you can send me an email at andy@milesfranklin.com. If you want our price list that we do not publish, which will be as good or better than anyone in the United States, info@milesfranklin.com. Say you heard me on Quoth the Raven. Any questions about what you heard here, please feel free to send me an email. I will give me a little time. I will respond as promptly as possible. But like I said, Chris, the honor is mine. You're one of the few guys who I truly believe sees the world in the correct light. And you're good at injecting humor and levity into it. And that's something I should get a little better at
Well,
myself,
you have
because
to
at
because
the end, you gotta laugh.
it's an absolute fucking freak show circus out there. So I mean, what, reality TV is nothing compared to what the hell is going on in this country. And like we said, we certainly live in interesting times. So, Mr. Shackman, thank you, my brother.
Yeah, brother.
And I'm sure we'll be texting each other at some point relatively soon. But stay in touch, all right,
Yeah,
buddy?
man. I'll look forward to picking up where we left off, bud. You stay well. Talk soon, and thanks for having me, Chris.
All right, thank you. That was the one and only Mr. Andy Shechtman, my buddy. Ah, what a fine human being. I encourage you not only to listen to what Andy said here, but go find some of his other appearances on the web. He's all over. He just did one with Kitco that I really liked. I'll put it in the show description. If you enjoy the podcast, please shout out Andy. Shoot him an email, andy@milesfranklin.com. Check out my friends over at JM Bullion. Also, if you're looking for gold or silver bullion, my friends at Swan Bitcoin, that link is in my podcast description for $10 in free Bitcoin. And George Gammon over at Rebel Capitalist Pro. Tell them all that I sent you so that I may potentially eat one thimble of rice next month and can make my modest mortgage payment on my 380 square foot apartment. It gets smaller every time I talk about it. All right, fools, I'm out of here. Oh, I got a great guest coming up after this one too. I don't want to tell you who it is, but that'll be out, I'm sure, in a week or so. All right, fools, I'm out. Peace.